Thanks, Howard, and thanks everybody for your good wishes. I'm Don, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm very grateful to be here today, sober. I have no idea what I'm going to say or talk about. I thought I'd wait and see who's here. And looking around, I know nearly everybody here today. I've met you all and known some of you very well, and have very high regard for all of you. You know, it's wonderful for me to have met all of you. I'm a long time in AA, so greatest part of that has been in regular AA, you know, where I've been asked to do something that I really was very doubtful about. I had parted company with my religion when I was 16 years old, around that time. Remember there was a photograph of the Pope on the paper one day, and it's like some things we remember, you know, remember significant things in our past. I was an apprentice plumber in London. I live in the west of Ireland now, in a nice quiet place, civilized place, but I was an apprentice plumber in London then, and I was working in Oxford Street, well known, in D.H. Evans, which is a big store, everyone in England knows it. And I was working there. We were putting in a new boiler in their basement, and every day at like 10 o'clock we had breakfast, and we'd sit around someplace and have our tea and sandwiches. And there was a guy looking at the front page of the paper, probably the Sun, and there was a picture of the Pope on the front page. And this guy Bert, he was saying, look at this fucking Pope. He said, surrounded in priceless paintings and statues and all that. And he's looking for pennies for black babies from us. You know, that was the thing at the time. That was one of the things, a fundraiser. And I heard him say that. Now, up to that point, I had been, you know, raised a Catholic. I was a person that went to church every Sunday. I'd never questioned it, because you don't question it. I have memories of getting into trouble for not standing up quick enough after class to say the after class prayer, you know. Stuff like that. I remember, and I didn't have anything against it either. We had good times. It was like Sunday morning going to church here. It was we walked 3 miles to the chapel, so I walked up the road and I picked up with two friends, and we walked all the rest of the way to church. And after church, it was my job to bring home the newspaper from the shop, and I remember we were looking at ads for watches and ads for things we couldn't afford but wanted to have, and just stuff like that. It was just a happy time. There was three different parts in the church, and one was the mountain end where all the poorer people go. The other end was the village end where the shopkeepers and probably big farmers and stuff went. And then there was a middle aisle, which the sort of people that would throw pieces of paper and smile at each other and, you know, have fun during church would go. And that was frowned on. And I wasn't allowed to go into that section, of course, as a child. But so you kind of, you wanted to get to a stage where you could go in the middle part of the church, in the middle aisle, up on the balcony. I can just remember that as a happy, fun time that was. There was no problem with it. You never questioned it. And every year a mission would come to the parish. And at that mission, the missioners would talk about stuff that the priest didn't talk about during the year. They talk about sex, and they talk about hell, fire and brimstone, and talk about all that. And of course, we all wanted to get in and hear that. And we wanted to hear it before we were old enough to hear it and stuff. You know, it was kind of exciting, and we'd be talking about it afterwards, you know. And some of the missioners were really, you know, able to lay it on. And yeah, we were afraid of hell and afraid of, had all that awful fear of going to hell and that awful guilt if one done something wrong. And the usual stuff, you know. Richard Dawkins today reckons that was actually worse than child abuse, you know, people leaving children in fear of going to hell for doing something wrong, you know, something not all that wrong really, but and it is child abuse, I think, that sort of thing. But anyway, that's how I grew up. And when I found myself at 16 years old in Oxford Street listening to this bill criticize the Pope. I felt like knocking him off the chair. I felt like he had no right to talk about the Pope like that, you know, because I'd never heard anybody criticize something like that before. I don't know if you can imagine that or if it's worth imagining, but that's how I felt. But of course, I didn't have the power to do that. This fella, Bert, I think his name was a great big strong man. I just kept quiet. And I was at the time the religious correspondent in at that job, because we used to do the crossword every morning. And anytime there was a religious question, they'd look at me, because then I would automatically know the answer. And none of them seemed to know any simple things, simple stuff that we learned at school. They didn't seem to have ever even heard about, you know, and it was just came naturally to me because we'd been listening to it all our lives. But at any rate, I had to let Bill, or I had to let Bert pass, but he made me think, and it was on my mind for you know, the following few days and weeks, and he started that element of doubt in my mind about the whole thing. And before too long, I was, you know, I could see that it was, I had come to the conclusion that the religions were just businesses, you know, like washing powder companies, really, you know, and that one religion would promise to get your soul whiter than the others, you know. And that's more or less how I felt about them ever since, really. And I suppose in recent years, I've gone on to read a bit more about it. And I have family, I have a daughter, and I was a few years ago, I was in hospital for an operation, and we passed by my daughter's house on the way home and visited her, and she had a book there, Dawkins's The God Delusion, and I read that, and any doubts I might have had or anything like that were completely dispersed, you know, by that. They said that anybody who reads that book, if you're an agnostic or a free thinker, or if you're, you know, some other version of a doubter, if you read that book, you'll probably come away from it being an atheist, you know. And I kind of identify with that, and that's how I've been since. And why am I talking about that? Because about 6 years ago or 7 years ago, I spent a little bit of time over visiting my daughter in England, and I have a sister lives there in Brixton in London, and I stayed with her, and her husband is in AA, has been in AA for some years as well. He came in about 2 or 3 years after I did, and he had the book Where to Find, and I was looking in that book. He had stopped going to meetings largely because he's getting fairly old, and he had polio as a child, so he's not very active. But each time I looked at the book, I looked through it, and I found this meeting in Islington in London, and it's I think it's we, I'm not exactly sure what they call it. I thought they call it Atheists, Agnostics and Free Thinkers in Islington, and it's on every Tuesday night at 7 and every Thursday night at 7, although they're two separate groups. But I was in Brixton, and I had a bicycle, my nephew's bicycle there, and I could cycle to the meetings in Clapham and Streatham and Brixton and a few more. I could cycle to them, so it was easy enough, and I was enjoying it. I was enjoying meeting all the people as well, but that meeting I'd seen up in Islington was on my mind, and eventually I decided I'd go to it. You know, it would have been easy not to go. That's the thing about us alcoholics, or about me anyway, you know, one can have all these intentions and not actually carry them out, you know. But so this particular evening, I looked at the map, the A to a Z, and I coupled it with a visit to the canal. There's a canal that goes up there. And I thought, I'll go to King's Cross and I'll walk up by the canal all the way up to Islington and get there for 7 for the meeting, which I did. And there I met, like, Cyril and Aaron and, you know, quite a few more that you probably all know as well now. And that sort of was one of the best things I'd done in my 41 years in AA, you know. It completely changed my experience in AA. And I have felt so much better about it and, you know, find it so much more interesting ever since, you know. And not listening to the same thing night in, night out, meeting in, meeting out. I'm not listening to the same stuff all the time. I've learned an awful lot of stuff. It has introduced me to a load of new reading that I've been able to do. I don't remember a lot of it, but I've enjoyed doing it all. I enjoy reading it. I have a daughter who has got sober as well, and we talk about it sometimes, and we mention books. And as soon as I mention a book to her, it'll arrive in the post the following week, or something will happen like that. She'll buy it from me on iBooks or whatever. And, you know, that's lovely, and that's interesting. And she spent 3 days with me there over the last, she went off yesterday, but we had three of those good days, the good weather together. And we went to the sea swimming. I actually swam in the sea for the first year for a few years, because over the last few years I wasn't well enough to, you know, to do that. And possibly this year I wouldn't have felt well enough either, because I had her with me, and she was beside me to keep an eye on me, and that I was able to do it, and I was well able to do it, actually, you know. I was actually well able to do it. And I find that sometimes things I think I'm not able to do, that if I have a go at doing them, I probably can do it, you know, or I can do it to some degree. So that was lovely. And I'm really grateful for that, you know. I swam at the very first place I ever swam at. And there's another place in here near us called Pulgorum in Eastkey, where a local doctor noticed there was like a little inlet, and if he had a wall built at the front of the inlet, that the, you know, this little inlet would capture the water when the sea goes out. And you give it about an hour and a half, it warms up, and it's beautiful, you know. It's like a really nice swimming pool, and we spent a few hours there swimming around. So, you know, she has a boyfriend now. They've just bought a house together, so that's great. It's lovely watching that. It's lovely watching Donna's life come together and her do well, you know, and life go well for her. And you know, I spent the day out with my wife yesterday. We went off up to Enniskillen, which is in Northern Ireland, which is Britain, and we done some shopping, you know, buying all the stuff you can buy a bit cheaper up there. And had a nice day out. And I stayed up late last night watching the Olympics. I watched our four rowers come third. It was really funny. I hope that especially the Irish members here today saw it, because they had to present each other their medals, and they gave each other, you know, really mad handshakes, you know, a bit like politicians would do here at home. It was very, very funny to watch. I enjoyed that, you know, and I find things that I can enjoy, and I'm free now to do them, you know. And I stayed up until 3:30 or something this morning and watched that, and I slept until 11. So I'm not really all that long up now. I've just been up long enough to have some tea and something to eat, and check the news, and check the WhatsApp posts. And you know, that's not a bad little life, really. You know, it's a brilliant life. I haven't heard from any of my local members in quite a while. You know, when the lockdown started first, we talked on the phone a few times. They know how I feel. You know, I told them that I'm going to these meetings, you know, for atheists and freethinkers, and they're going to meetings in their garages, and there's one of them has a fairly big house that lives on his own. I know they're going to meetings there, and I did get an invite about a year ago or more, you know, to go, but I declined because I know my wife wouldn't let me back in the house here again had I gone, you know, because we've been very careful throughout the lockdown, you know. But you know, that's an aspect of my life that's sort of ongoing. I'd like to be on good terms with them, and I like to, you know, to meet them, and I think very highly of them, you know. But they're stuck in their ways, and they're just, you know, they're not for changing. They probably, I don't know if they worry about me, or if they, you know, I'm not sure how they feel, nor now do I give it too much thought, you know, really, how they feel about me and what I'm doing. If I have a problem at the moment, I suppose, you know, it's I'm involved in another group, and we're making an attempt to try and get recognised nationally as an AA group. But Ireland, unfortunately, Irish AA have a rule that says that there are no such thing as specialized groups. So they don't have women's groups, they don't have LGBT groups, they don't have atheist groups, free thinker groups, any sort of outside group. It's like the tyranny of the majority. They will only allow the standard AA meeting. It's the only thing that can go in the book. It's the only thing they'll accept a donation from. And that's, you know, taking up a good bit of my thinking time. I'm wondering what could be done. You know, it's the only way this says it can be changed is if it comes from the bottom up. If there's group conscience meetings and that the request goes up from area, from group to area, and area to intergroup, and then intergroup to conference. And if a decision is made like that. And that's going to take years to happen in this country, if ever. We've been trying it. It's been tried for a long time already, and there's no change. And this morning, the thought hit me. I wonder if there was, like, you know, protests or letters from other countries sent to our GSO to make them aware that every other country in the world has changed. And why haven't we? You know, I just wonder, would something like that help? It's helped in other areas of people's lives, you know. Like countries like Poland and Hungary are not getting away very well with their, you know, with the way they treat black people or the way they treat gay people. They're getting loads of pressure from other countries. And, you know, I'm very grateful to Joe C and to all the people in Canada that started this change and that has really led the way for us to have these meetings that we have now, you know. So, Howard, I'm going to leave it there. Thanks very much.